Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear from petitioner Kelly Coppedge v. Highlands Insurance.
May it please the court, Mr. Patrick Wolinski will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 4 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, Kelly Coppedge is here today to ask this court to reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeals in that the Court of Appeals incorrectly applied an exclusion in the Highlands policy to deny coverage for Kelly Coppedge. Kelly Coppedge is an oil and gas pipeline contractor, or they were an oil and gas pipeline contractor for 63 years. They recently went out of business. As this court may be aware, this is an important case. It's important for all contractors in the construction and oil and gas field. Numerous parties have filed amicus briefs, including the AGC of Texas, the Associated General Contractors, Associated Builders and Contractors, and insurance organizations such as the Texas Association of Insurance Agents and the Office of Public Insurance Counsel. And the reason this case is important is because the Court of Appeals decision deprived contractors such as Kelly Coppedge with coverage they thought they had, with coverage the insurance industry thought they had. And that coverage is for off-premises discharges of pollutants from a job site where a contractor is performing operations. The facts of this claim. Kelly Coppedge was laying pipeline along an easement pursuant to a contract with Natural Gas Pipeline Company. In August of 94, they were laying pipeline in Wise County on property owned by A.L. Peterson and pursuant to an easement held by Natural Gas Pipeline. Their ditching machine, which basically cuts the trench in which to lay the pipeline, encountered a mobile crude oil pipeline, a different pipeline that was mislocated and Kelly Coppedge was not aware it was there. An accident occurred. Approximately 1,600 gallons of crude oil were spilled. Kelly Coppedge undertook cleanup immediately with not so much as a request from any other party.
If there had been a request, would there be no coverage?
Your Honor, under the terms of the pollution exclusion, there may not be coverage except for the fact that Highlands waived reliance on that exclusion and the trial court never argued it.
So we're arguing about coverage in a circumstance where isn't there almost always going to be a request, demand, or order for cleanup?
Your Honor, I would say in the vast majority of cases there would be, and a paradigm example would be of when, say, there's a leaking underground storage tank that the insured may not be aware of, the insured may be concealing.
And if there's no coverage, we're just arguing about very few cases under F1A, I take it.
Your Honor, under the facts of this case, this may be a limited factual scenario. But under a situation such as this, where you have a potentially catastrophic situation, a contractor severed a pipeline, crude oil spewing on the countryside.
And he's got to go beg the owner, look, don't make a request or an order or a demand on me to clean this up, because otherwise the insurance is not going to pay for it.
No, Your Honor, I beg to disagree. I think what happened, it has happened in this case, the contractor came right out on the site, moved, took created ditches, draws to drain off the oil to contain it. Without the necessity of request, they did what they needed to do, Your Honor.
I understand
Honor.
That, but if the owner had come on the property and said, please clean this up, no coverage.
Your Honor, I'm not sure in that situation that even that exclusion would apply here, because we still have a classic accident here. It's a situation where there's no government ordered mandate to clean up. That's where this provision has its genesis, Your Honor.
If they said, I request you clean this up, there would be, you say there would still be coverage.
Under situations where the contractor is out there doing the cleanup, I believe there would be. That's not this situation.
Owner just walks out. Well, I'm trying to get a feel for how much we're arguing about under F1. Because it looked, you say, well, all these amicus people have said, oh, no, coverage all over the world depends on this. But it looks to me like you basically concede that if F2 had been raised and if a request had been made, there wouldn't be coverage.
Your Honor, it's a carefully drafted exclusion, and yes, we are talking about the applicability of F1 in this case because F2 did not apply. And I cannot stand here and say there's going to be 1,000 other cases where F2 would not apply. But nevertheless, it didn't apply in this case, and there's got to be other situations where it would not apply. Otherwise, we would not have the amicus and the construction industry interest in this case.
Well, my suspicion is that they're hoping that neither will F2 apply. But you're not making that argument, and they don't seem to either.
Well, Your Honor, we're in the position of arguing that, no, we're not making that argument. It just factually didn't apply here. This isn't an F2 case, in other words. You're correct. It's not an F2 case.
We don't know that. Do we? I mean, there's no evidence one way or the other. The summary judgment record just hasn't been addressed.
Your Honor, what the summary judgment record says is that Kelly Coppedge cleaned up to mitigate damages.
Pursuant to written agreements.
And that it entered into agreements. All those agreements are not in evidence, but the facts of the matter are that Kelly Coppedge came in, started the cleanup, and then worried about the agreements.
Is there affirmative evidence that no request, demand, or demand was made?
Your Honor, we have the terms of the agreements, and we have the adjuster's notes. None of these are in evidence in this case. This case was tried on a stipulated set of facts.
But my point is there's nothing in the summary judgment record that says affirmatively that no request or demand was made that Kelly Coppedge clean up.
That's true, Your Honor. The record states that agreements were entered into with Mobil and the neighboring landowner, and that Kelly Coppedge cleaned up the damages and sought coverage from Highlands.
How much of the damage did the insurance company agree to pay?
Your Honor, the insurance company paid for the damage to the Mobil pipeline, which is the primary other item of damage. That itself was covered. Highlands took the position that the cleanup costs were not covered based on the pollution exclusion.
Okay. I just want to ask you, does the insurance company during any of this process, has the insurance company indicated that it will indemnify anyone for any pollution damage at all? I mean, have they ever said that there are circumstances where damages are caused by pollution that there is indemnification for? Or is their position strictly that there is no indemnification for any damages caused by pollution, period?
Your Honor, I believe their position is that there are circumstances under which there would be coverage for an insured under the pollution exclusion, but this isn't one.
Okay, so there's no question in this case that Kelly Coppedge paid a premium that included coverage for damages arising from pollution as a result of some accident at some point. You're just arguing that not for this type of circumstance.
You're right. That's a fair statement, Your Honor. In fact, these are the situations under exclusion F, which is the exclusion. And there are, I have hard copies in front of each of you. We're not going to do an eye test here. But it sets out specific situations in which coverage is not provided. It doesn't start out with an overall, there is no coverage for any damage from pollution, as was the case in National Union versus CBI, which this court decided. There they said there's no coverage for pollution anywhere, at any point, and at any time which occurs. Rather, there are carefully circumscribed situations, albeit they are broad and they do take in many and most of the situations where you would have pollution.
Okay. What example does the insurance company give, if they have, of when they would indemnify an insured for damages caused by pollution? Have they given an example?
The one example that comes to mind, Your Honor, is where a general contractor has contracted out to perform the work and has subcontracted all of the work to subcontractors, okay? And they say under that situation, subsection D would not apply if those subcontractors encountered pollutants at the job site. And subsection D, I think, is the heart here.
But this is not, is that the one that deals with the occupied premises?
No, Your Honor. That's
A.
That's A. And they would say their position is that A would not apply because that general contractor isn't present on the site.
Except agents, of course, could occupy as well as principals.
I think that's the rejoinder to that, Your Honor.
But that's the only example that you're aware of.
That's the only one that comes to mind here before you today. I have counsel for Highlands may have some others.
Okay.
But in contrast, what Highland is saying is that it excluded F1A that applies here. That excludes coverage for pollution which is discharged at or from any premises at any time owned or occupied or rented or loaned to any insured. They take the position that a contractor occupies a site, and that mere physical presence of that contractor is sufficient to trigger the exclusion. Kelly Coppedge's position is no, a contractor does not occupy a site. If coverage is denied under subsection A on that basis, then the coverage which is basically preserved under subsection B is lost. And what is preserved under subsection B is that where there is a pollution discharge from premises on which a insured or contractor are working, and the contractor did not bring those pollutants onto the site, the exclusion doesn't apply. That's what happened here. Kelly Coppedge, its ditcher was moving along the easement. It came across a pipeline that was already there. Kelly Coppedge didn't bring the 1,600 gallons of crude oil onto the site, it was in the pipeline.
It would be an occupier of premises under Hernandez.
Your Honor.
And why should it be different?
Under Tri-County's reading of Hernandez, I think that the Hernandez case said that a contractor is really an invitee in most cases, unless they have control and can exclude other parties from the site. And basically, in Hernandez, they held that contractor was not. Here, I think that Highlands is going even further by just saying that the fact the contractor is there means that they're occupying it.
But you'd say even if they had control of the premises, they still wouldn't be occupying it.
Your Honor, in order to occupy, and this is our position, Your Honor, this is Kelly Coppedge's position, there has to be more than just being there. I would term it as a quasi-possessory interest. There has to be an element of intent to possess those premises.
And this is for purposes. Be less than a legal or beneficial interest?
In certain circumstances, it probably could.
By what?
How about this situation? And this is not the Kelly Coppedge situation. Assume there's a contractor on a job site. Say it's a five-year project, if they're erecting a skyscraper. They have a job shack there, a permanent job shack, and there's an accident within that job shack. They occupy that part of the premises, but they don't occupy control of the entire premises. Another situation may be a maintenance contractor, which is under contract to maintain a chemical plant. They maintain their job shack also, but if they're on the other side of the plant, I don't think it can be argued that they occupy that other part of the plant.
Well, under your example, the general contractor that does have control of the whole site, aren't they an occupier?
No, Your Honor, because I think that, again, there has to be an intent for some possessory interest. You look at the way the manner in which occupy is used under property damage coverage and CGL policies, occupation is not applied to contractors. Coverage for contractors gives the insurance industry fits. There's no question about it, Your Honor. But it's a carefully crafted and a circumscribed type exposure. The nature of contracting isn't to occupy. The nature of the contracting is to go on somebody else's site, build the building, and get out of there as quick as you can to go build the next building.
You've responded to the Insurance Environmental Litigation Association amicus brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
But you didn't respond to their claim that at least 33 jurisdictions go against you. but I take it you disagree with that.
Oh, Your Honor, yes. That statement made, I believe they said 33 jurisdictions have held that the absolute pollution exclusion, exclusion F, is unambiguous. I have no quarrel with that, Your Honor. The question is, when you apply that exclusion to this set of facts, does it apply or not? You cannot use the label absolute pollution exclusion and say it's unambiguous and carte blanche say, well, that's what happened here. There's absolute pollution exclusion, no coverage. If you go through and, albeit painstakingly, apply the provisions F1A and D, you'll see that in this situation, there should be coverage. And that's what we're asking this court to do, Your Honor.
Well, let me, according to your brief, they were laying about 1,000 feet of pipe a day.
Right, Your Honor.
And this was along an easement.
Right, Your Honor.
So this wasn't one piece of property where they were sitting. This was a machine that's actually traveling down the, it'd be the easement or the road, for that matter.
Yes, Your Honor.
And it happens to cross, as it's digging a trench, it happens to cross somebody else's easement, apparently, and hits a pipeline.
Right, Your Honor.
And the argument from the insurance company is they have actually occupied a premise someplace.
That's right. Your Honor, consider this scenario where Kelly Coppedge is bringing his ditching machine across another field, not subject to the easement where they're going to work, but say there's an above-ground pipeline and the employee isn't looking and hits it, causes the same spill. Under Highland's theory, I guess that would be occupying, although they're just passing across that piece of property. And that just doesn't hold water, Your Honor. There has to be some sort of intent to maintain some sort of possessory presence or interest in that in those premises.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. Mr. Robert Schultz will now give an argument for the response.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. I want to make 3 points in my argument today, if I can. Number one, a rule of strict construction that normally would apply if raised by the policyholder in an insurance coverage case doesn't apply to this case, because it never was raised by Kelly Coppedge in the trial court in their motion for summary judgment. And this was not a trial on stipulated facts. These were counter motions for summary judgment. There were stipulated facts, but it's not a 263 case. The Fort Worth Court of Appeals said that, but it's not. It was decided on cross motions.
Let me ask you about Mr. Walensky's last example. If this ditching machine had simply been crossing the road, going from one work site to another, and had somehow damaged a pipeline that's above ground, then they're covered, or are they not covered?
If it was crossing a road that was not a part of his work site, that it was normally working on, it's just going from one place to another,
okay,
there likely would be covered.
Okay, let's suppose that they are traveling on a road that they're supposed to dig a ditch on. They're actually digging a sewer ditch on the road. And this road happens to cross an underground easement, and they break that pipeline. Then they aren't covered.
Well, let me put it this way, Justice Senate. If it's a part of their work site that they are purposefully there and working on, then I think there is not coverage.
So if it is a state highway and they've been asked to dig a drainage ditch along the side of the highway, and that highway just happens to cross an underground oil easement, pipeline easement, and they cut that pipeline, they are occupying the highway for the purposes of the exclusion.
The only way I can answer that is to qualify it and say that that highway is a part of the premises upon which they've been charged to work physically present. But yes, there's
no. I'll ask you an F2. Did you put any affirmative evidence in the summary judgment record that there was a request made to clean up?
We did not represent Highlands in this case until after the summary judgment was granted.
So what's in the record?
We added F2 in a motion for new trial, I'll be very honest with you. That's when it came in. There's been a lot said in this case that's completely outside the record. There's been a lot in Mr. Walensky's argument that's totally outside the record. So with that as a preface, I will tell you that it was requested of counsel at trial by Highland specifically that they add F2, because there are requirements the Railroad Commission rules and regulations that deal with pipelines like this, that if you cause a spill, you clean it up. but no, I mean, my firm did not enter this case till after the summary judgment. So no, there is no affirmative summary judgment evidence. But let me ask,
going back to a question that Judge Emmett asked, if you're a contractor and you buy this policy, I understand the total pollution exclusion endorsement is not valid in Texas. Is that correct?
The endorsement on this policy was not valid at that time.
However, it was appended to the policy for some reason.
For other states, yes, ma'am, where it has been approved.
What coverage would a contractor be buying when they buy this policy? What does it cover having to do with pollution?
For polluting events, very little. Very, very little.
Would you give us examples?
Well, Justice Enid talked about if you were going from one site to another, let's say. I mean, this is not our case, but let's say you had a tank truck full of some pollutant, and you were moving from one site where you were doing work to another where you were doing work. And that tank truck was in an accident, turned over, there was a spill. You'd be required under the state law to clean it up. And there might be coverage for that.
Well, that would be D. It would be excluded under D.
Not necessarily.
Well, they brought the pollutants on the premises, didn't they?
I'm sorry?
In the example that you just gave, if they were transporting the pollutants, then didn't they bring the pollutant onto the premises?
But my example is if they were between premises, between work sites, on a roadway or something like that. In all candor, I don't know. I will say this, and I mean this with all respect. There's very, very little coverage for polluting events, but that's not your job to determine how much there should be.
But in order to interpret the policy, we obviously have one endorsement that at this time Texas would not allow, and that was a total pollution endorsement. I mean exclusion, correct? So that must mean that the exclusion we must not exclude everything.
No, ma'am, it does not necessarily mean that. All it means at that point in time, at that snapshot of time back when this was done, was that endorsement had not yet been approved in Texas. It doesn't mean anything in regard to how much coverage there might or might not be under this exclusion.
Well, is it your position then that exclusion F on the left has the same effect as the exclusion on the right? Do they mean the same thing?
No, not necessarily.
Okay, then
there could be slight differences.
Let me follow up on what Judge Spector said then. What examples are there of what would be covered under the exclusion F included in this policy?
Well, the only ones that immediately come to mind are the one I just said. If you had a tank truck, for example, that was going from one construction site to another unrelated construction site or a different construction site over here, there's a wreck on a highway. You're not doing work on those premises. Those are not premises that you are occupying in the sense of it being the site where, under Hernandez, you occupy the site where you're doing work.
What's the effect of F2 under those circumstances?
Under those circumstances, F2 I'm blanking. Pardon me just a moment. F2 is a different division altogether. At that point, it could very well be that if there was a requirement that it be cleaned up and you had brought them to the premises where you were doing operations, that it might be excluded.
It looks like
F2, but it's operations is the key point there.
It looks like F2 eclipses F1. Is that right or not right?
No, it doesn't. And this is the fallacy in their argument that F1 somehow renders it, they say F1A and D. But
I'm talking about F2. It looks like F2 means that we only worry about F1 in cases where somebody gratuitously cleans something up. How often is that going to happen?
Well, nobody gratuitously cleans anything up is the bottom line.
Be my sense of it.
But F2 does exclude loss anytime there's a request, demand, or order. There's no doubt about it.
Isn't that almost all the time?
Almost all the time, yes, sir. The intent of this is to exclude almost every circumstance.
I'm just curious why that wouldn't be raised in the trial court, if that's really what it means.
Pardon me for interrupting you. That is the $64,000 question. That's why we raised it immediately in the motion for new trial. Now, I will say this, however, just if I may, Justice Hack, these were summary judgments. So the fact that, and you must look at what Kelly Coppett said in their summary judgment, and what they said is there is coverage, but for, and this is their words, the scope of exclusion F, not exclusion F1A, F1D, but exclusion F.
Why do we have all these amicus briefs if F2 swallows F1B or F1A?
Well, I'm not sure that it entirely swallows F1A, but I will say this, that the intent, I think, clearly, of exclusion F, and I didn't grab it, is to exclude as much as possible coverage for polluting activities.
If F2 is from God,
yes.
Why do we have all these amicus briefs? Because it seems to me F2 is going to take care of my situation.
I think it will. When it's properly raised, I think it will most of the time. But there could be times when it, for whatever reason, it doesn't.
If I was in the business, just a trucking business, and I don't truck any chemicals at all, and I just wanted a commercial general liability insurance policy, would I have these provisions in it?
You could have.
I'd have to pay extra or pay less to get these provisions? Or
I don't think you could draw that type of specific...
So if F2 was really to take care of the situation where somebody's in the business of cleaning up pollution spills, we want to make sure that we're not covering any of that kind of activity. I mean, that's what F2 could be for.
F2 is very broad, yes.
But it could be designed to cover everybody who is in the business of cleaning up spills, right?
Well, in the business of cleaning up spills, but a lot of people over these last decade or so have found themselves in the business of cleaning up spills, even though that's not what they intended to do.
Right.
There's no doubt about that.
That's right. And if they've been called upon to... whether they caused it or not, if they've been called upon to clean up the spills, you don't want to be insuring that kind of conduct that results from damages from cleaning up the spills.
That's right. And that's why Highlands Insurance Company here pays for the broken pipeline and pays for lost oil. They just didn't pay to clean it up.
Right. Well, but it excludes paying damages for damages caused by the cleanup. Isn't that what F2 does?
In part, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Why should occupy mean something different in F1 than in J?
I'm not sure it does. And to answer, I believe it was your question earlier, Mr. Walensky, the leading case in the country on this particular point was Tri-County. And it was decided before this bill happened. It was decided back in April of 1994. This bill happened in August of 1994. And while it might have, while it did clearly decide the Tri-County case on F1A and F1D, it held specifically that it was that under either of those exclusions, that would not be covered. That Tri-County factual situation would not be covered. So I think that Occupy is used fairly consistently throughout the policy. Now, you've got to take it in context. This is my second point, is that you must take it in context. And in this context, the terms that are used under Beeston and CBI and all the cases that talk about insurance coverage. And again, the rules of strict construction do not apply here because Kelly Coppedge never stated in their motion for summary judgment that this term was ambiguous. They said it doesn't apply, and they say because of the way you construe F1A, it subsumes F1D, which it does not. And that renders...
Almost.
Well, no, it doesn't, and here's why. Under F1D, if you're an owner of property and you have hired a contractor to do something, whatever it is, and that contractor causes a spill, and the contractor can or won't clean it up, the subs can or won't clean it up, and you're a disinterested owner, and are vicariously liable, at least under F1D, there might be coverage. Now, there might not be under F1A, but there are certain limited circumstances, I think, when F1D might apply to situations that F1A does not. But, I mean, the purpose of this clause, and I'm talking about F in its entirety, is to exclude as many coverage for as many types of polluting events as there can possibly be. And the fact that there's overlap, or the fact that they said, you know, we're going to do a belt and suspenders, we're going to do this, and we're going to say it this way and this way, does not render it ambiguous. But my point is that if you look closely at the summary judgment, Kelly Coppins said two things. They never said, they said two things and they didn't say one thing. They didn't say that occupy was ambiguous. They did not proffer a meaning for occupied that's different than ours and say, therefore, it's ambiguous. They simply said it's the interplay of the two that renders the entire clause ambiguous. And they said, and this is not a burden of proof, a trial issue, this is a summary judgment issue. They said, we in our summary judgment are taking the position that there's coverage except for the scope of F. We're going to show you that F doesn't apply. So when they say we have the burden of proving that exclusion, that's true at trial. But this isn't trial. This is a summary judgment proceeding.
Why do so many participants in the industry think this is covered? I know you argue, well, those aren't legal authorities. But they are somewhat persuasive that people selling these policies, buying these policies, think they're covered.
Well, let's look back at Tri-County again, if I may. Tri-County's decided in April of 94. This happens in August of 94. Tri-County was handled on summary judgment. It goes to the San Antonio Court of Appeals. And the San Antonio Court of Appeals says, you as a contractor occupy sites that you work on. And so F1A applies. In that case, the subcontractor actually brought the oil as sprayed on the parking lot. So they said also F1D applies. But it is crystal clear, especially in the last paragraph of that opinion, that they said both apply. And both are independent grounds for this rule. Tri-County sought a writ of error for this court in 1994. And one would think, since that was watched very carefully, and that's the leading case in the country, that they would have seen the doomsday now, then, that they see now. That they would have seen the problems then that they see now. But there wasn't a single amicus brief filed on behalf of Tri-County's position in the San Antonio Court of Appeals or here. No one. Now then, we're inundated by amicus briefs in this case. They've tried to put in matters that are outside the record, that have been filed by outside counsel, you know, whatever. And they say, no, this is the end of the insurance world. No, it's not. Tri-County's been the law up until today in this state since 1994. And run Tri-County through Westlaw, run it through any other database. Try to find the articles written about it before these amicus briefs were filed, saying it's doomsday, it's the end of the world for us.
Mr. Schultz, with all due respect, can you answer Judge Heck's question? I haven't heard the answer yet. Some of the materials that are before us are not a question of just amicus briefs, but also a question of industry publications, including insurance industry publications as well as the contracting industry. So in addition to actual briefing, we've been cited to secondary material that seem to take a position contrary to yours. And I understand that you seek to discredit those secondary materials, except from what the record looks like in this case in terms of the briefing, it seems to be that the view is pervasive against your position.
Oh, I don't think the view is pervasive with respect against our position, because the Tri-County case is exactly on line with our position. Absolutely, man. You may overrule it, but it is exactly on line with our position. The insurance agent's publication, as an insurance agent's publication, skirts around the issue, talks about it a bit, but there might be some coverage for some off-site discharges. That's all it says. One of the amicus briefs filed by the old Anderson Kill firm, There is one point where they cite to their own publication, their own book about insurance coverage. If you look in the index of that book, Tri-County is not even discussed. It's not even mentioned.
You can buy coverage for this sort of thing, I suppose.
There are various kinds of environmental impact liability coverage, yes, that are available on the marketplace. No doubt about it. And I would like to, the only other thing I would like to do, just to show you, because again, you must take these in context. I mean, Kelly Coppedge says, well, if F1A and F1D are read the way they think they're read, then you're out because F1D is meaningless. And yet, they hinge on the word occupy without looking at the way it's stated, not only in F1A, but in other provisions. And that's the MedPay provision that's before you. And what the MedPay provision says is we will pay, in the policy, says we will pay for medical expenses in regard to accidents on property that you own or rent. Not own or rent or occupy, own or rent. And it says, except that we won't pay for expenses, for medical expenses in regard to accidents that occur to someone if they're in the place that they normally occupy. Now that's used in the MedPay provision, coverage C of the same policy. So if occupy means in and of itself, as used in this policy, some sort of long-term, almost possessory interest, then why in another part of the policy does the policy say we'll pay medical expenses for accidents to individuals on property you own or rent unless it occurs in the place that they normally occupy? Why say normally occupy if occupy means long-term possessory? But it means physical presence. It's the only reasonable meaning. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Council.
Just to address a few of the points, Mr. Schultz's last point on the medical payments provision of the policy, I submit, and Kelly Coppedge submits respectfully, that that is like comparing apples to oranges. Medical payments is simply, in essence, first aid coverage, and it's basically designed for owners and landlords that if their tenants get hurt on the property in the portions that they occupy, they will pay the up to $5,000 of medical coverage, and that's it. The exclusion for a person on the portion of the premises that who normally occupies, i.e. a tenant in his apartment or whatever, that is excluded because the tenant usually, there's usually a waiver of liability, there's a limitation of liability, even a hold harmless in the lease, which allows the owner will not ultimately be liable, so they don't need the coverage.
Mr. Walensky, Mr. Schultz relies, really his entire argument relies on Tri-County and the way Tri-County dealt with Occupy. That's the oil spray on the parking lot.
Yes,
so he says, you know, Tri-County, that's it. So,
Your Honor, I beg to disagree with Mr. Schultz. Tri-County is far from a leading case in the country. There are at least a half a dozen other cases that take the position that Kelly Coppedge is taking. There is one that explicitly says Tri-County is wrong. And that's the USF&G versus B&B Oil Well Service case. These are all discussed in our brief. In fact, there is one case.
That's a federal district court case.
Pardon, Your Honor?
B&B is a federal district court case?
Yes, Your Honor, out of Mississippi. Your Honor, there's also another case, Employers Casualty versus St. Paul Fire Marine, out of California, curiously involving HCV, a Dallas contractor.
Do we have to hold that Tri-County is wrong to hold?
No, Your Honor. You can factually distinguish it, and the way you can distinguish it is that in that case, the contractor brought the waste oil onto the premises. So it is really subsection 1B1 that applies. That's the case in our, that's the provision in our case, which basically preserves coverage because Kelly Coppedge did bring the waste onto the job site.
The Court of Appeals does say F1A does apply. I mean, there was
It does say that.
So we would have to disapprove of that portion of the opinion.
Your Honor, I think you have to reconcile those two portions of the opinion, and it could be distinguished in that that the pollutants were not brought onto the site. Now, the Occupy analysis has been criticized by other courts. Curiously, the Tri-County's reliance on 1D1 to deny coverage has been cited favorably, at least in another court in California. So Tri-County, it's far from being the leading case in the country. And as far as the example of where a contractor has coverage, various of your honors asked questions about the secondary materials, the other insurance materials, even the testimony in front of the regulators. What is the example that's given? It is this case. It is where a contractor is on third-party premises performing operations, encounters a pipeline, causes a spill. That's the property damage that for which there's coverage under exclusion F1D1. As far as overlap with F2, F1 applies to bodily injury and property damage. F2 applies to cleanup costs. There may be a difference between the two in some cases.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes the argument in today's causes. These causes will be submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay.